Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news ad free. That's amazon.com/news ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Welcome along to the Slacktivist Action Group. For those of you who don't know what slacktivism is, it's got a bad press at the moment, the idea that people just click on things that they support and then they forget all about them. Slacktivist Action Group, the idea, we do a little bit more. We click on something, we then turn up, we then have a drink, and then we forget all about it. So, the Olympics healed the nation. No more arguments about immigration. We had loads of medalists. But of course, a lot of those medalists were immigrants or children of immigrants. We don't want people sneaking into Britain on a dinghy unless they can paddle it freaking quickly. Then we'll have them. We don't want those people from Cali. We'll build a wall around them. But if they can pole vault over that, no problems at all. Now, the government have said, haven't they, that they are going to take children from Syria, from the refugee camps there. They're not going to take the ones who've already made it to Calais. But you're thinking, swimming to Turkey, walking to Calais, running to get on the Eurostar. It's got triathlete written all over it. Theresa May has also said that the high-speed rail link will be going ahead. £50 billion to enable us to get from Birmingham to London 20 minutes quicker. Now, I have no confidence that we won't get to London 20 minutes quicker, but then be stuck just outside London for 20 minutes waiting for a platform to become available, and then due to signalling problems, just as we get going, seeing the slow train from Birmingham chugging past us. We have the most expensive trains in Europe. I did some research. This was only last week. A single off-peak to Glasgow by train is £134. You can fly to Barcelona for 40 quid. No wonder there is climate change. If you've got a meeting in Glasgow, it's cheaper to fly yourself out to Barcelona and then fly yourself from Barcelona to Glasgow. Or perhaps even better still, fly yourself out to Barcelona and whoever you're meeting in Glasgow, fly them out to Barcelona as well. Now, David Cameron, he said if he lost the referendum, I won't resign as Prime Minister. He did. He then, when he resigned as Prime Minister, said he wouldn't resign as an MP. He has. He said he didn't get any benefit from his father's use of tax havens, and he did. On the plus side, he says he won't disappear from public life. So he will. We've also had this week, haven't we? We've had talk about the boundary changes. They're going to try and reduce the number of MPs down to 50 to save us money. But we have 800 in the House of Lords, the largest legislative chamber outside of China, and each of those lords costs us £100,000 a year. In the United States of America, their upper chamber has 100 members. Basically, there's two for each state. How about we have 99 counties in the United Kingdom. We have one elected lord for each of those counties and the winner of Bake Off each year. Whilst you ponder that, would you please welcome to the stage our three guests this evening, Tim Lawton MP, Julia Hartley Brewer and Simon Evans.
Thank you.
So often to make ourselves feel better, we like to talk to our guests at the top just to get them to tell us a little bit about themselves, to make us feel better about ourselves. So Simon, if you'd like to kick off, if you can tell the group something that maybe you're slightly slack about that we can then empathise with.
Well, when you gave me some warning of that question, and I've been pondering it today, and there's no question in my mind, the thing that I am too slack about is focus. I fail to focus, I fail to remain focused on any one thing for any period of time. And whenever I have the responsibility of looking after my children, which I had this weekend, so my wife had a rare self-indulgent weekend at some sort of printmaking course, and the thing that drove me mad...
It's self-indulgent,
it's very self-indulgent, totally non-profitable.
Working.
Yeah. And that was what drove me mad about them. They couldn't remain focused on any one thing for any period of time. And I realised that this was a family trait which I passed on to them. And so now either group family suicide or some sort of retroactive therapy is in order. But
so they couldn't focus, but no. You couldn't focus on looking after them.
I was
them.
Focused. I managed to remain focused on their inability to focus.
Julia, what about you?
I want to be a bit more slack about not being slack about pretty much anything. My husband says, you know, my ability to have a row in a room on my own, in the dark, with no one else there, knows no bounds. It's a roughly 7-minute walk to the tube from my home in the morning, and I can have at least 3 rows on the way. No problem at all. Cyclist on the... Yeah, we know each other, Tim. Cyclist on the pavement, someone letting their dog poo somewhere, anything.
Do you in fact live only a minute from the tube, but it actually takes you seven
yeah,
minutes?
Yeah, exactly. Oh, it takes me hours sometimes. Because I would like to be someone who could, you know, lie in a bubble bath and a glass and put some candles out and just go and relax, but that would annoy me.
Yeah, these candles are rubbish, the temperature's not right,
exactly.
This bath isn't big
enough. I'm not relaxed enough. No, I've never been very good at relaxation. I would say when I was in labour, all 74 hours, they didn't take me seriously. No, harder for my husband. I had a bed and drugs. He didn't have either. He found the 3 days awake very, very hard. I was just busy proposing to anyone who'd give me an epidural. But I did the Telegraph crossword in between contractions because I needed something to do. And they all went, well, she's not having proper contractions. I'm 2 minutes apart. Give me drugs.
Crossword took 74 hours? Or it was...
I'm not very good at crosswords.
Those contractions can't be easy. And what about you, Tim? What would you like to offer to the group?
I would like to be less slack about split infinitives. Curse of the devil.
In terms of you go on Twitter and you take people up if they've split their infinitive or...
It's a disgrace. I mean, the standard education in this country today...
But they're not grammatically incorrect. Split infinitives have been proven to be...
It's
a syllogism. There's no English law which says... It's in Latin. It does not transcribe from the Latin. The law which says you must not split a Latin infinitive because it's not possible.
I'm sorry, I lost focus there.
Yes.
It's not a grammatical law. According to Fowler, who surely you can have no greater
authority.
It's
a valuable thing that
we've kicked off already.
Shakespeare split infinitives.
So there we go.
Infinitives, he did
You
split.
Should not split an infinitive. It should be a capital offence.
Maybe we should all be a little slacker about what other people are slack about.
Far too tolerant.
What sort of madness is that?
Yeah. Let us move on to more substantial matters, perhaps. Tim, the idea is to try and get people on to talk about their passions. You were children's minister, and on your current newsletter, I noticed that...
What? You've been reading my newsletter?
I've been reading...
Someone reads
your newsletter.
You ought to
get up more. Yeah, bloody hell.
So I've not been at all slack on this one. You were encouraging your constituents to read the latest report from the Joseph Rowntree Foundation.
Very important.
And, I mean, I say I read it. It was 356 pages long. So I skimmed it and enjoyed a couple of the graphs. But one of the graphs was on child poverty. And I noticed that under Labour, from the financial crash in 2007 down to 2010, child poverty had gone down. But under David Cameron, 2010 to 2016, child poverty had in fact gone up.
No, you had it up the wrong way around.
I assure you I didn't. But David Cameron...
It's relative poverty and absolute poverty you're talking about there.
Right. Well, David Cameron said, judge me when I leave office on how the poorest in society have done.
Yeah, he's history.
Yes.
I don't think he planned to be leaving office quite this soon.
No, but what he was hoping to sort of muck up child poverty at the moment, but then come good at the end and then judge me on this.
And your point is...
No, but the problem with relative poverty is the definition is it's people who earn less than 60% of the median income. So basically, if everyone in the country was a billionaire... Yes. And then there were a few people who were millionaires. They would still count as being in poverty.
It's always nice to read a report and then have somebody explain what you read in the report.
Is Rowntree's agenda still to try and shift fruit pastilles? Is that the old? Is that the underlying?
I think they shifted so many.
And how can children be expected to spend their pocket money in adequate amounts every weekend if they haven't even got a colour television?
I think they shifted so many pastels, they decided to set up a foundation to do other things.
We love the kids so much.
The 19th
century. All their teeth have fallen out. No. We love the children. Rowntree should look to their own house first. Yeah. Distributing gooey versions of sucrose in different colours is no way to win over my heart when it comes to children's welfare.
Pages of saying exactly how they're going to dish out more sweets cheaper.
They're always about a do-gooding Quakers, the sweet industry. Look at Cadbury and Kellogg as well. They were a bunch of nutters.
Well, Tim, listen.
Rowntree Foundation. No doubt they set up some village without pubs at some point as well.
How long is this focus going to last for? Tim, you were Andrea Leadsom's campaign manager.
And we're moving swiftly on.
Yeah, well, I thought people weren't
just
necessarily...
Just like the campaign did.
Yes.
Well, achieved second place.
Bloody
beat
right.
Michael Gove, didn't you?
He was saying that people had had enough of experts, but people had also had enough of Michael Gove, hadn't they? We saved the country from 9 weeks of Michael Gove boring us senseless.
You also saved us from 9 weeks of Andrea Leadsom by caving in after 3 days.
Would have been more useful if you could have saved us from 9 weeks of Michael Gove prior to the Brexit referendum.
Yeah, 9 years, true. Yes, no, it was a great campaign, fantastic campaign. We had a great march, and she had a great few days.
That you were hoping she would be on, and then she didn't even attend her own march.
No, she was great. Great candidate, came from nowhere to get, what did she get, 66 votes?
Came from nowhere, and she stayed there.
Stayed there.
And
that was,
yeah.
Anyway, she's a lovely, lovely girl.
But we should offer you congratulations. You are now acting chair of the Home Affairs Select Committee.
Big time.
That's right.
The unfortunate demise of 1K Vaz propelled me to this position.
Indeed.
Yes.
Well, you know,
it's entirely self-inflicted.
Both political careers end in disappointment, but his at least ended in a climax. So I suppose that's a...
two climaxes. But yes, he wasn't quite select enough about his home affairs, it seems. The question I'm sure the Selectivist Action Group would like to know, did he ever offer to fix your washing machine, Tim?
No, he didn't. No. But he did his research. You know, that's what it was all about. We did a report on prostitution and a report on drugs. So nobody can say that he didn't do his research for it.
No, he wasn't a hypocrite either, was he? He was pro-poppers, to be fair.
Absolutely.
He didn't try and stop anyone else enjoying them.
No, I mean...
And he took us around the red light district of Copenhagen as well.
I just do you remember when he was meeting Eastern Europeans, or Romanians and Bulgarians at the airport?
Yeah, exactly.
Turns out he was just looking for future prospects.
As you say, it wasn't necessarily, it's important to do your research. Crispin Blunt with poppers, he spoke up when they were talking about banning poppers, saying that he used them, the MP.
He buys them up the road as well.
Is that right? I was unaware of exactly where he does buy them. But he was saying that, wasn't he, for anal sex... You know, there are some health benefits.
That's what they're for, isn't
it? Yeah, well, because it relaxes your anus, Tim.
I tried one during an experiment when I was about 17. A solo experiment, I should say. But I'd heard this rumour, and somehow, I can't remember, it was at a party or something, somebody gave me one, and I went into the lavatory and tried it myself. And all I can remember was the most immediate pounding headache I've ever experienced in my life. And I've never again.
Relaxed bottom? Yeah. Did you ever?
You covered in ribbons.
Did Joseph Rowntree
just
do a report on that as well?
No, I could write a chapter or two for them. But yeah, maybe you get used to it or something.
Tim points out, though, about the ribbons, though. There was an MP when they were talking about banning poppers, actually mistook the poppers they were talking about and thought they were talking about tubs of party streamers. You know, they hadn't done their research.
They'd have someone's eye out.
Well, it's certainly not going to relax your anus, that is it? But
echoing pop.
Well, I guess, though, you know, at the climax, though, if the person you're having anal sex with lets off a party popper, it'd be quite a nice touch, though, wouldn't it?
Do you mind if we celebrate the Queen's Jubilee while we're at it?
Followed by a round of happy birthday.
Yeah. You should do this at the next Home Affairs Select Committee meeting.
I think so. We will. We have, actually.
Because you're only acting. You've only got it for like a very short period of time.
Another few weeks. I've got to make my mark somewhere. But yeah.
we obviously we're in a new Theresa May government. We don't know too much about what the government's got. One of the few things that they have actually given us some details on is grammar schools. Mm. Which she hasn't just said, Theresa May, she hasn't just gone as she grammar schools means grammar schools, and then we just leave it at that. She said a little
poppers
bit more.
Poppers mean poppers.
That's it. So for this we know. She said that it's grammar schools. It's not a binary system. But surely if there are grammar schools and not grammar schools, that would seem like a binary system.
No, but there are other not grammar schools too, so there's all sorts of
but not in anybody's
schools.
Area. If you, in a particular area, certainly part of where I grew up, it was either a grammar school or not a grammar school, a binary system.
Well, you're right, it's a very brave decision, Prime Minister. But we haven't got any grammar schools around where I have, live, so we'd quite like some grammar schools, please. I mean, there's 163 grammar schools. 99% of them are rated outstanding or good. So they must be doing something right.
Imagine
so why don't we have
a grammar
more?
School that's not rated outstanding or good.
Well,
what are
exactly.
they doing wrong?
Yeah, the one. yeah. Mm.
But I mean,
well, what they do is in that respect,
so
they unearth an unfortunate and unwelcome truth about humanity, don't they? That it's the children who are the problem, not the schools. Because once you stream out the problem children, suddenly the grammar schools are rated wonderful, good, highly successful. You know.
It's the parents that are the problem. We all know that.
It's the fuel, isn't it? It's the fuel. That's the thing.
Well, let's...
It's what I mean, is the parents or the children, it's the families that play into the schools that make all the difference. The teachers have a limited effect, just
moment.
Like MPs have
we
a limited effect on the country. They
we have
represent.
Selection by postcode at the...
Well, we don't just have that. We have a bizarre system where we allow children to be selected for schools based on their parents' religious faith or pretense of it, rather than on a child's academic ability. That's insane in the 21st century.
Talk about insanity. One of the things that Theresa May said in the same speech, that... religious selection wasn't working, the religiously selective schools, 50%, she said it wasn't providing enough diversity. So at that point, instead of providing more diversity, she was saying that it's not working, we'll go from 50% up to 100%, you can be 100% religiously selective, so there's absolutely no diversity at all. If you're trying to be more diverse, that doesn't seem very clever, does it?
Well, as I said, I think it's a very brave decision, Prime Minister.
No, I think
that may have a bit of a problem.
Right.
But I think grammar schools, why not? There's 5% of kids at grammar school at the moment. Let's have more grammar schools, more academies, more comprehensive, whatever. A mixture, and you pay your money,
but,
you take your choice. Or you don't
pay
your money.
You can't just say have more grammar schools, have more academies, have more comprehensive, whatever. That just means more schools.
Well, you need more schools. Cause
well, that would be
population.
Fine, but that's obviously nobody's going to argue with more schools, are they?
Here's you can't. The deal. Okay. You don't have to send your kids to a grammar school.
Absolutely.
No,
my guess is, with their attention span, they probably wouldn't get in.
No.
Well, they're an independent school, as it happens. So they wouldn't get in, no, because we pay for it.
But this is it. I'm so fed up. I went to a comp, and my parents are both working class parents who went to grammar schools. I am so fed up. Every time I see someone on the TV talking about how terrible grammar schools are, the very first thing I do is Wikipedia them. Oh, what a surprise. Almost without exception, they went to private school, they went to grammar school themselves.
Well, because they recognised that those advantages got them a platform in public life. Because having good education still does give you great advantages. In life. It doesn't mean that those people who had great advantages,
generation.
It doesn't, that's the whole point. You're trying to do that.
No, I'm not.
The whole point about having advantages
no.
in public life is that, or having advantages in education that give you advantages in life is that you should make them available to everybody
well,
and
available.
Not limit them to
those. They
people.
Are available to everyone. Instead of having to be the right faith or having money, you make those schools. I'm very happy for those schools to start out only in the poorest areas and not even be
Absolutely.
Available to middle class families. The reality is, we've just seen the Olympic team do amazingly well. Do you resent the fact that you're not in the Olympic team because you're not a great? I'm assuming we're not. Neither of us are in the
Could
Olympic
be.
Team.
Can't
I'm
believe
assuming.
You're reframing the question as to
no,
whether
no,
or not I
no,
am.
No, it is relevant. I don't resent the fact I'm not in the Olympic team. I don't resent the fact that I don't train with them. I don't resent the fact that I'm not in, the London Symphony Orchestra because I can't play a musical instrument. So why do you resent the fact that children who are academically bright, a particular kind of intelligence, not the only kind, that they should get the academic education that suits them? I think it's such a nonsense in this country. We are so obsessed.
Well, let me wade in here at the moment.
Right,
Julia says very rarely to people from comprehensives, actually, in terms of, I went to a comprehensive and I went to a state grammar school, and out of the two of them, actually, I much preferred the comprehensive on the grounds that we got the best of both worlds at the comprehensive because we had streaming. So you actually had the brightest kids of any one subject within the comprehensive moved into the same class. So if you improved, you didn't actually...
Why did you go to both?
Well, because I moved from one... So one was a comprehensive area and one was a straight grammar school area. So, but the point would be is that you look at the grammar schools that we have at the moment, and actually this isn't a leg up for the poorer kids.
No, but of course not, because we only have a few.
Because we've hardly got any. And they're all in places like Kent and Buckinghamshire.
But on some accounts, 70% of the country are middle class. If you, in terms of not being able to stuff the country in the grammar schools with middle class kids.
What do you think middle class kids?
Well, no, but they are all about this crazy concept of mediocrity. And the worst thing governments have ever done is to assume that just because a kid comes from a less well-off background, from a council estate, then he or she is doomed not to succeed. That is a scandal, and that's gone on for too many generations. And grammar schools, amongst others, give people the opportunity.
This is not supported by the evidence. Everybody knows this. You can't just keep saying
it. All the evidence is either from the 1950s or evidence from now, when we only have 130 odd or 160 or whatever it is.
But surely all the evidence is dismissed by you, in other words.
Surely that is good evidence.
Despite the fact that it is evidence.
By definition, in an area where they only have a few grammar schools, like Kent or other areas, I know people who've moved there.
But it's 25% of the population. That is what allowed into grammar schools in any given area. So the leg up...
75% won't. The academically bright kids will get an academic education. What we need to do is actually bring in the 1944 Education Act that was never enacted. We were supposed to have a tripartite system, which is what the Germans did. Of course, it hasn't worked for them having technical schools at all, has it? We should have the technical schools that we were promised. So the bright, technical, practical kids can get their education. But let's all stop the pretense that every single child can get
Well, answer my question. Answer my question about the comprehensives. You've got the streaming, so you've got the best of both worlds. You've got the
grammar. Predicated
down to the bottom.
At my comprehensive,
it's not. You look at the results of comprehensives that have been streaming. The top ones that would have gone to the grammar school get very similar results to the grammar school. It's only overall that they don't. And you look at it; it's a leg up, not for the poor, is it? It's basically a good saving for middle class parents.
Let's
have grammar schools only for kids on pupil premium, for example, as one option.
But that would you object happen, to that? But my point is, if you've got 70% of people are middle class, you'll basically get, you won't get the poor kids going there over term, you'll get middle class parents taking it over.
Them? Would you support them if they had to have at least 50% or even 100% of kids who would qualify for pupil premium?
Well, my point is, would you
support them?
I think it's a divisive education.
No, would you answer the question? It's terrible, isn't it? Bloody politician. Would you support more grammar schools if they only, if they had to admit at least 50% or maybe 100%, whatever, kids who qualify for pupil premium, i.e. those kids who come from poorer backgrounds or kids in care or whatever, would you support them then?
I think it would all depend.
Yes or no? Yes
why,
or no?
Why not? But,
I'm being helped by the Slacktivist Action Group on this.
We segregate by wealth already.
Yeah. But my...
Do you think that the school that Tony Blair's kids went to or the school that David Cameron's kids go to
Michael
are remotely
Gove.
The same
or
as
Michael
the one that you or I went to? I don't think so.
Your argument is totally ad hominem. But give up for a minute. The point is... The point is, does the system work? Is the system fair? Are the people who are arguing for a certain way to proceed hypocrites because they send their kids to good schools? People have to live in the real world they find themselves in. When they have children, and they have children that they want to do well, they play the system to the best of their ability while trying to reform it. You cannot say to people, don't try and reform the system while your children are enjoying a private education. Or nobody who ever has any privilege which enables them to have a platform in the first place will ever be able to speak out against the iniquities of the system rose through.
No, the point is the flaw in all your arguments.
You cannot continue to identify the hypocrisy of people who want something better for the whole country because their kids have got it.
You're denying it to all the children whose parents aren't well enough to find the
right
education.
No, I'm not.
Yes, you are.
You're
saying that those kids... Tough. Whether you're
this isn't what grammar schools do.
And
also,
can we stop attacking middle class people? My parents are middle class. I'm middle class because my parents were bright working class kids who did well and worked hard. I don't think we should have the shame of being middle class.
No shame in it. There's no shame in it. There's no shame in a comprehensive school either.
What is wrong if all the kids who get in are working middle class?
I got good results. It's easy enough.
This is easily the most emotional we've ever got in this activist action group. We haven't even talked about Brexit implications yet. It's all
very emotive. School calling it emotive because you're talking about moulding young people when they're still vulnerable and you're making decisions on their behalf. It is. And it's also always anecdotal because everyone had an experience. I went to a school that had been a grammar school until the year before I went there, and then it became a comprehensive school. And it changed quite dramatically while I was there, and I could see it was changing.
Were you part of that?
So we all went to comprehensive schools apart from Andy. You went to a grammar school.
I also went to a comprehensive, and I believe that in terms of sixth form college, I believe Julia went to a slightly different place as well. Is that right?
I went to the state sixth form college.
Which was formerly a grammar school, wasn't it?
It was. It was many, many years before I got there. It had no selective entry at all when I was there.
So what was the point you're going to make?
Well, the point I was going to make was the new plans. They're saying, oh, you're not going to be judged a failure at 11, right? Because there's going to be a chance. Well, you are.
Look, this place, if you have an 11 pass...
But their point is they're saying is now you're not going to be judged a failure because you can have another entry at 14 or 8 and you can have entry at 16. So there's a chance that you're going to be judged a failure at 11, at 14 and at 16.
This all comes down to this apartheid that is in education, that we've had a system up to now where either you go to university or you're second best.
Yep.
And we had this crazy system where we wanted to get 50% of all kids going to university as if that is the only thing they should aspire to. That's nonsense. Actually, a load of kids do a lot better than kids who go to university. They had apprenticeships, they did vocational courses or whatever. And yet they're made to feel second-class citizens because they didn't make it to education. It's each to his own. Some people will be appropriate to go to university, some people it won't. What we don't want is a stupid system they have like in France where 56% people go to university and half of them drop out half of the way through.
But one of the things that was being suggested is there's going to be extra kids... extra places for poorer kids. But would you want to be one of those kids who've got extra places? Here come the extra place kids. Not only are they poor, but they're also thick. Would you want to be one of those people?
Why are you assuming that poorer kids are automatically thick? Why are you suggesting that if you come from a poorer background, you're automatically thick?
That's the problem, isn't it? You are writing off
a whole generation of social class of people just because they don't come from your middle class background.
No, you are. 25%.
You are. Exactly, if you're picking the top 25% academically and then you're putting extra poor kids in, you're taking them from somewhere other than the top 25%. Would you want to be that kid that had been taken there?
So you're admitting that the poor kids could get in just as equally? I mean, come on. There must be a way. It cannot be beyond the wits of man to come up with some selective system, whether it's over a period of years in lots of different methods, where you actually get rid of... You don't allow the parents to skew it with the tutoring.
How about if the selective system took place within, let's say, a school which was comprehensively offering education to everyone and then allowed them to be streamed?
I've spent the last 20 years as a political journalist writing about this, reading all these bloody reports on this stuff. There is simply no evidence at all of a system in this country of it happening in 2016 or 2017. All the evidence is from the 1950s or in a situation now where we have a tiny minority...
But what evidence, and then, do you have that it's going to be so much better?
Germany. Germany had a tripartite system with the grammar school, technical and the comprehensive and the secondary modern. And then for many years, they had the most successful education in Western Europe. Then they stopped it. They went to a comprehensive system. In 2003, 2004, they had the PISA studies. They showed they were plummeting down the education system.
True.
They reintroduced selective education. We like to follow the Germans and lots of other things, don't we? They're pretty good at this education.
We haven't liked to follow them that much recently, have we?
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right?
For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Simon, you have been doing a wonderful series on Radio 4 involving economics. Brexit is proving quite exciting in terms of the economic implications. It seems that we have 2 years once we trigger Article 50, but for those 2 years, we're still a member of the EU, so we can't conclude any trade deals. As it gets to the end of those 2 years, it's going to be fairly frantic, isn't it? There's going to be some pro plus being taken when that 2 years is just coming up.
I like the idea that you presented me as somebody who's presented some sort of comedy economic shows who has any idea how this would work. I mean, everyone is in completely open water here. All I can say is that I suspect the realpolitik of it will emerge in hindsight, but nobody knows what they're going to be spending those 2 years doing going forward. I would imagine that a lot of nods and winks will take place. I tend to experience utter panic when any kind of major decision like this, an upheaval, an unexpected change of course takes place. On that morning that I woke up and turned on the TV and there it was, you know, UK votes to leave EU, I felt panic. I hadn't expected it, but I'd expressed ambivalence beforehand, and then when confronted with it, I thought, oh, no, I was only joking. You know, I didn't vote for it, but I didn't think it would be a disaster. But now we're in this phony war situation. Nobody knows what's going to happen. And I think there's an awful lot of posturing on both sides. But particularly, it does kind of annoy me when I see a lot of people, I suppose, in the Remain camp or on the left, broadly speaking, every time a German or any kind of Eurocrat basically gives an opinion as to whether or not the city will be allowed to maintain its passports or whatever, they kind of, you see, you fools, you've ruined everything. And I think, come on, we're in this situation now. We have to all kind of get behind our team, basically. This is how it works. We have to demonstrate that we are united in this position and that we want to make this thing work going forward. And I suspect that most people who are terrified of the future even now have underestimated the degree of the UK's economic and political might in the world, because we do tend to do that. It's one of our most adorable features. We tend to think we're minnows, and we're not minnows. We're the equal of anything else, you know, and the EU is a far from stable structure as it stands, and there, you know, there is an awful lot of pressure from European industry that they have their channels of export open, remain open with us. So I don't think we necessarily need to panic, but how it will pan out,
David Davis has said that we need to be nimble, and certainly one of the things you wouldn't describe Boris Johnson is nimble, is it?
I don't think Boris Johnson will be playing any significant part in the series. he is going to be very much a sort of front of house, you know, MC. But think Peter Kay at the Royal Variety Show, and then you will occasionally, the curtains will go back and you'll get a glimpse of what's actually going on, and then the curtains will close again.
Well, I mean, obviously the French are very good at slowing negotiations down if it's in their interest to do so. You only had to be stuck at Dover over the summer to realise how good the French are at slowing things down. You can imagine that...
to break for lunch.
Well, that's it. I mean, you can imagine the three Brexiteers turning up with their thousand-page document ready to be ratified or whatever, and there's just one French bloke in a kiosk with one stamp and turns the first page, bang.
It is funny, though, isn't it, when once you remove yourself from the EU and you start to see them slightly more clearly and as distinct nations, and you think that is the French approach, of course, and industrial action for them is their first port of call in any kind of dispute, whereas the Germans are such a very different animal, and it makes you realise that you're not really negotiating with a single bloc at all. You're negotiating with a, you know, you can either see that as an advantage, or you can see, my God, thank God we're out of it, because this was never a unified creation or process at all.
There's a debate at the moment, though, isn't there, whether we should have hard Brexit or soft Brexit. It seems that Boris Johnson's very keen to have something in between, a sort of semi-tumescent Brexit, if you will.
Flaccid Brexit.
Yes. Tim, what is your position on this?
I really can't get worked up about this. I voted for Brexit. I campaigned for Brexit. We're going to have Brexit. We waited 43 years for it. Waiting a few more months to get our ducks in a row properly is no big deal.
Now, obviously, I'm not one of these people who expect us to give us this whole idea that we should tell everybody what we're doing whilst we're doing it. It doesn't seem to me terribly sensible. Yeah. But at the same time, this idea that we think we can have freedom of movement and we can remain in the single market.
We're not going to have freedom of movement. That was one of the whole points of it. And we're not going to remain in the single market. That's part of the problem.
Well, let me quote you say that, Tim, but let me quote your own newsletter back at you, in which case, Tim. As we conduct our negotiations, it must be a priority to regain more control of the numbers of people who come here from Europe, but also to allow British companies to trade with the single market in goods and services.
Yes.
Trade with, yes.
Well, and that's whilst we're doing negotiations as well. Look, this whole thing about the single market, 3/4 of the economy of the EU is in services. How much of that is actually cross-border? Less than a fifth. So actually the single market, which was invented back in the 1980s, in services, financial services, everything else that goes with it, has actually been a complete non-event. So why are we getting worked up about this? The City of London will remain the preeminent capital of financial services in the world. The next nearest in Europe is Frankfurt, which rates at number 18 or something like that. London is consistently first. European banks will stay in London because that is the place to be. So all this crap about all passporting and all this sort of stuff, it's a complete red herring. When they calm down, I think we're getting to a calmer phase now, all this knee-jerk reaction about, oh, we're going to be really bastards to you British because of the way you voted. At the end of the day, Europe has a trade surplus with the UK of £70 billion. So it's actually in their interest, as well as us, to have an amicable divorce and sort it out going forward. They're not that stupid.
No, you
can only shoot yourself in the foot.
But obviously,
that many times.
In the sense that time is not on our side. Everybody talking about the Canadian deal, it's taken 7 years.
But they weren't in
the EU. Why have they taken 7 years? Because they haven't negotiated with 28 countries.
Well, do we. That's the whole point. We have to negotiate, don't we? Because
there's 180 other countries.
But we have to negotiate with them as well. Because at the moment.
And one of us does. That's the problem. The EU has just taken 9 years to negotiate a trade deal with India, quite an important country. And it's just collapsed. 1 in 12 people living on this planet is an Indian under the age of 28, and we haven't got a trade deal with them. They're the sort of people we need to be doing business with, and outside of the EU, we can actually get on and do it, and they're desperate to do trade deals with us. It will never happen if we've got to pander to 27 others and the lowest common denominator, and that's what Brexit's going to be all about. I've just been in Mexico. Everybody we saw in Mexico wants to know when they can do a trade deal with us. Another G20 country, China, Australia, New Zealand, all want to do trade deals with us, which we can't do in the EU.
Well, it's the whole idea that 2 years and that Liam Fox, David Davis and Boris Johnson are going to complete all these negotiations within the 2 years just seems frankly fanciful to me. I'm admiring your confidence,
Tim. Why, how do we know?
Tim.
Nobody's ever done it before.
Boris Johnson negotiates with his wife quite successfully, and any man who could manage to get away with that.
He has negotiated,
he's got to be quite,
but only so well that he got kicked out several times and then was allowed back in meekly.
Yeah, well.
Now, I can't imagine that's going to be a good analogy with Europe. But
I have a funny feeling that at least one of those three men will resign from office at some point.
Well, Liam Fox will probably resign because he's got nothing to do for 2 years in the sense that he can't actually conclude any deals, is he? So he's just got to go around having lunches. He was slagging off all British businessmen for being fat and lazy.
Andy, you've done this. Which agency are you with now?
I'm Off the Curb.
Off the Curb, like me, right? Did you have an agency before Off the Curb, or were they your first agents?
Yes,
agents?
No,
they're
about
me too.
My fourth.
When you're not allowed to go to another agent and say, I want to sign with you, I'm fed up of X.
We're not supposed to.
I was
to.
With X. No, you're not supposed to. You do, don't you? Exactly. That's what I did. I was with Duncan Hayes. I said to him, listen, he looks after Ricky Gervais, and it was becoming a one-man operation. So I said to him, I want to move on. And he explained to me the terms, that I wasn't allowed to approach anybody else. And so that was... You know, you have to go and have a quiet lunches incognito. This kind of thing is going to go on. You know, don't kid yourself.
I'm not denying that we aren't going to have a nudge and a wink.
Ready,
I just whether we're going to have it sufficient nudges and winks over the next 2 years to
we can
to
have
get...
unofficial negotiations, unofficial yeah. talk.
And we sign on the
David Davis
the
has
after.
A reputation when he negotiated in Europe in the past. He was known as Monsieur Non by the Europeans. Now they have supposedly appointed a French hardliner.
Monsieur, non.
Well, that's it. Monsieur Jamais or Monsieur Impossible may well be meeting Monsieur Non.
Yeah.
As long as it's not Juncker, that's the main thing.
Mm.
He's probably too long a lunch.
We'll go very shortly. I'm sure the audience have got questions. Before we do that, let's tell everybody about the shows that we've got coming up, the Slacktivist Action Group. The next one we have on October the 30th. We have Vince Cable here, we have Russell Howard, and we also have, from The Guardian, Hadley Freeman. On November the 28th, last Monday of the month, we have got Henning Vane, we've also got Chuka Umunna, and we've got Fleet Street Fox. And then for December the 19th, we've got Dr. Sarah Wollaston, we've got Michael White from The Guardian, and we have a TV star who can yet be named, but we'll hopefully be able to tell you at the next one. So all of that to look forward to. If there's anybody listening on the podcast, please get in contact if you want to have any questions to ask, andyparsons.co.uk. So, hands up for anybody who would like to ask a question. Tell us your name and ask us your question.
Hi there, my name's Keith. The question is around about passporting. I mean, clearly you're very strong in the idea that we won't lose it, but what happens if we do lose it?
Well, the situation at the moment, those people are most worried are European governments who major banks have got most of their operations in London, because they are all of a sudden, after Brexit, not going to be regulated by those European countries. So they are going to have to buy into British regulation, which is actually the best in Europe of financial services, not the other way around. I predict that there will be hardly any, if any, major European banks who will headquarter their major operations out of London. People come to London because London is the financial capital of the world. All the facilities, all the services that go with it are in London and other parts of the UK. So it's the places we compete with are not Frankfurt, Paris, they are Singapore, Tokyo and New York.
It is worth saying, I think, even though I have a bit more scepticism than Tim, it is worth saying there has been no example in the world ever of a major financial centre just being deserted overnight or even over the course of a decade.
Actually,
they take a long time to build up.
It did happen in New York. But what's more likely to drive people out of Europe is a Tobin tax. So without the break that the UK has put on all these crazy taxes some of the EU want to impose on financial services companies, if they then start to bring those things in, they'll be heading for the doors of everybody else coming to London who's not here already as well.
Some of us might quite like a few more taxes on the banks.
Well, it's not taxes on the banks, it's taxes on the transactions, and that goes
happy
to the consumers.
Two.
Yeah, well, we can do that.
Let's go over to here for our second question. Yes, please.
Hi, how are you? I'm Kim. So just had a quick question. I think it's great that, you know, you guys have great views on hard Brexit and the magic that's going to happen. But my confusion is this. So you say that, you know, that there's going to be informal negotiations, but the EU has specifically stated that there will be no informal negotiations until Article 50 is triggered. Therefore, you will not even have any guidelines on how to do that. So where is your information coming from on trade deals, as well as Australia is the only one who says that they'll do a trade deal with the UK before the EU? And America specifically stated that there's no way that's happening.
I'm just not sure that Jean-Claude Juncker is in a position to know exactly what any member, any representative of the British government is doing or saying or lunching with at any one time, I'll be honest with you. Of course they're going to be informal talks. They're informal talks
they're
happen
going on
all
already.
The time. Whenever you watch these big political summits, you know, when you have all these politicians sitting around a table having dinner, that's not where any of the decisions are made.
Yeah. Well,
everything goes on in the back rooms. So it's all going on already.
I've just been in Washington, and everybody there wants to talk about Brexit, what the opportunities are going to be after that. They don't see it as a bad thing, despite having rolled out President Obama to tell us all it's going to be the end of the world if we voted for Brexit.
I mean, the only thing I would say is that you can't trust what they say, nor can you trust what Tim says, of course. You know, that's just how life is. That's what politics
Absolutely.
Is like. And afterwards, you go, oh, they were talking. Okay, I see. And that's what happened. But it's true. I mean, to exactly the same extent that, you know, Junkers or whatever, the EU will say, well, you can't do this and there's no movement on that. And then Tim, of course, will sit here and say, don't worry, it's already started. Well, they're both just talk. It's just talk. It's cheap. Nobody's ever going to hold anyone to account for it.
Well, I think we should, when 2 years after Article 50 has been triggered, let us invite Tim back on the panel and we will quote back to him his confidence about passporting and everything else, and we will see what happens. So, who else has got a question?
Do you mind if I change the subject?
Not at all.
Oh, thank God.
I found it very, very depressing, all the subjects we've talked about tonight. So let's talk about the American election. Who are you going to be rooting for in the debate, and what advice would you give to the candidates?
Julia, would you like to kick that off?
Hillary Clinton all the way. Oh. She's not the most attractive candidate, and I did kind of hope that the first female leader of the free world wouldn't be the wife of a former leader of the free world, but call me old-fashioned. But no, I mean, hands down, I mean, I would be a Democrat anyway, not a Republican, but hands down, Hillary. My only advice, I mean, to her would be just, just try and look like you're a nice person. Because she knows the fact. We know she knows the policy. We know she knows the facts. My big worry is she's going to come out with all the facts, all the policies, and Donald Trump is just going to say something so outrageous. That's all we're going to talk about, and we'll forget.
But the thing about Donald Trump is he renames everything after himself, doesn't he? So if he did ever become like the president, it'd be he'd live in Trump House in Trump DC in the United Trumps of Trumponia or whatever it is.
Well, what was really extraordinary was you see that tweet sent out by Donald J. Trump Jr., his son, about the Skittles and comparing Syrian immigrants to Skittles. And genuinely, it's the fact that Donald Trump has managed to actually create another human being that's more awful than him. That's quite an achievement.
Well, he's a complete narcissist. And this idea that we're going to have a special relationship with America. We couldn't have a special relationship with Donald Trump because he's already in a special relationship with himself.
I mean, I've just been in the States and Mexico, and there is a very real feeling in the States that Trump could win. If you watch all the news channels and everything and the opinion polls, and some of the people going to backwater places, speaking to people who've always voted Democrat or have never voted at all, and they're all saying, oh, Donald Trump is right, we've got to stand up for America.
Well, you know,
all
this complete bollocks. It's the Brexit campaign that will have done it for them. That's what's given them the confidence, because the polls were roughly where they are.
They don't even,
for Brexit,
they've never heard of it.
They can't spell Brexit. Let them know what it stands for God's sake.
The New York Times certainly has heard of it.
I don't think people voting for Trump read the New York Times.
No, they can't. I'm no fan of Hillary, but I'm afraid she is the only alternative. But we then went on to Mexico, and we went to the Mexican Parliament, and they've got contra Trump posters all over the Mexican Parliament. God, they hate him with a vengeance.
Well,
quite rightly too.
Interesting that this idea that he was going to build this wall on the Mexican border, wasn't it?
Hey, and he's good at building walls.
Well, apparently at the moment there's actually net migration of Mexicans away. Basically, building the wall would actually be keeping Mexicans in America.
They have got all the major US companies are investing in plants across the border. From Texas in Chihuahua province, and that's where everybody's going.
The country that's going to need the wall is Canada when everyone tries to flee across the border.
Exactly. Yes.
Thank you very much for those people who are listening on the podcast. Please subscribe. It does manage to help keep the show free for everybody. So if you're listening, one click. Do it now. Do it now. We'll wait for you. Okay, well done. Thank you very much for that. Please spread the word of the Slacktivist Action Group. Our motto: if a little bit of knowledge is a dangerous thing, we are lethal, ladies and gentlemen. So we'll be producing mugs with that on it. We have hopefully had an interesting debate today. Feel free. We always like to give people things to do, to go away and do during the time. So go and research grammar schools in Germany, or maybe go on Tim's website and check out a 356-page report on the Joseph Rowntree Foundation and see if it mentions pastels anywhere amongst that. We don't quite know what the future holds, as we're here. We're not quite sure. Change is a difficult thing for anybody, and particularly for human beings. Maybe as they get older, it's a little bit harder. But anybody finds change hard, don't they? As an example, when I put money into vending machines, I don't tend to do it in stations, because I've put money into vending machines in stations for a long time, and I've often lost money, so now I don't tend to do it. But now, often you go into a station and you see people putting money into the vending machines and getting out exactly what they wanted. And there's always a little bit of me when I see that that thinks, that's not the Britain I remember. But please, ladies and gentlemen, would you give it up for our three guests tonight? Tim Lawton MP, Julia Hartley-Brawler, and Simon Evans. Thank you very much, good night, and good luck.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape.
And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.